Hey, hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast. I am your host, Sherry and Sade. Surprise, surprise. So today we have so many fun things to talk about. These are my favorite podcast days. We've got Prince Harry's visit to Scotty's Little Soldiers. We've got a decade of Invictus Games Foundation and the Sussex.com update regarding that. Now, if you are on my Patreon, then you saw that video. I did a full coverage video of Invictus 10-year anniversary and the hashtag IM10 celebration that included the IGF conversation and the service of Thanksgiving at St. Paul's. So in all the videos that I could scrounge up and photos, like, I mean, it is a full end-to-end visit or view of the Invictus Games 10-year anniversary. And that was probably the most fun project I've worked on all year. I am a big supporter of the Invictus Games and the Warrior Games, and I just love what they do, the foundation as well as the games themselves, all the participants, and of course, Prince Harry, David Wiseman, everyone that's on that team. I'm just a big, big fan and supporter of, and I love what they're doing. So making that video was just fun. And there's even clips of Heart of Invictus in there. That's one of the things I love about Patreon is they let me be very, very creative. They have their rules and I always follow the rules, of course, like citing sources, sharing links, original sources need to be visible and available. Of course, all that's done. That's ethics. But I love that Patreon lets me be really creative. And I just feel like the four Patreon videos are just way more well-rounded than I've been able to do in the past because I have that creative license and just like the platform trust. I love it. So if you haven't seen that, feel free to go check that out on Patreon anytime. But it was really fun to make that video and get parts of Harry's speech. It was just all really great. So today we're going to be talking about Harry and Meghan in Nigeria. We're also going to be talking about some pop culture stuff and what's going on with Jennifer Lopez and why everyone hates her again. That lady don't catch a break, but she's also hell on wheels. So I mean, there's a lot going on. So we're going to talk about that at the end. And then of course we have community conversation. Now, again, this past Wednesday, I was supposed to upload this podcast. However, it was the IM10 celebration and the service of Thanksgiving for Invictus Games, 10-year celebration or anniversary. And I just didn't feel like I wanted to put content out on that day. I wanted us all to be locked in to the celebration and the live streams that were going on from the service of Thanksgiving. I just didn't want to distract from that in any way. And so the video came out on Thursday instead of Wednesday. And I didn't do a Wednesday podcast so that I could just give them the spotlight and not take away from that at all. So it's really nice to finally get to catch up with you guys because it's been since Monday. We haven't talked since Monday. So we've got all that and more. So let's get started. Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Sherry and Sade podcast. It is always a pleasure to get to catch up with you. And thank you so much to Podbean for giving me this amazing platform. So we're going to start off with Scotty's Little Soldiers. But before I get to that update, I just wanted to ask, did you guys watch the Met Gala red carpet? I always keep up with it on the timeline. I will have to say Tyla's outfit, her look was so beautiful. I loved that sand dress, but I gotta be honest, I was so disappointed that she didn't do long wet look hair to go with the washed up on the beach kind of look. Ooh, that would have been so beautiful. I would have loved a nice wet hair look. You know who does the wet hair look really, really well is, we've seen Beyonce do it really well, which I love that wet bob, but also Kim Kardashian. She just kind of has that look and she has done the raindrop look for the Met before. So maybe that's why Tyla didn't go in that direction, but man, that I just feel like that was such a missed opportunity. But that hourglass purse, the whole thing, oh, she looked great. But who was your favorite? There were a lot of misses this year. I feel like for the last few years, there've been far more misses at the Met Gala than wins. Just people weren't on their game. Anyway, Zendaya looked great as always. I will say this. The first dress was my favorite. I liked the second dress because of the headpiece and the makeup, but I just thought that was way too much fabric for her little body. I felt like that could have been a little bit more fitted, but not everything is supposed to be fit to form. So I like that she takes risks and she goes for it, and she nails it every time. She and La Roche are such an amazing duo. All right, so I have talked your ear off enough. Let's get to our first topic today, and that is Scotty's Little Soldiers. Now, I always ask that people go to Sussex.com and turn on their notifications and their alerts from the website, because that's where you can go to get all of the information about Harry and Meghan from a firsthand source. So it's coming directly from them. And so it's accurate. But as you know, while Prince Harry was in the UK, he stopped by Scotty's Little Soldiers and paid a visit. And we have an update about that visit, and I'd like to share that with you today. It says, today, Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex, shared his continued commitment to supporting military families by joining 50 bereaved military children and young people at a special gathering organized by Scotty's Little Soldiers. Held in Park Lane, London, this event was not just a meeting, but a celebration of courage, resilience, and lasting impact of community. Today marks the first in-person convening since the Duke was named Global Ambassador of Scotty's Little Soldiers last year. His presence brought an aura of joy and excitement, engaging with the young attendees through a series of fun-filled activities. From tug-of-war to rocket balloons, these activities served a greater purpose, allowing the young people to connect with peers who understand the profound impact of their loss, foster new friendships, and create a supportive network. The day also included a more intimate gathering where the Duke spent time with members of Scotty's Council. This session offered a platform for these young individuals to share their personal stories of loss, resilience, and the critical support Scotty's has provided them through their journey. This meaningful dialogue underscored the importance of the organization's work and the difference it makes in the lives of bereaved military families. And they have some amazing photos of Harry with everyone from the staff to the children playing games, listening to conversations. he's playing this one game of like, put the Cheerios in a cup with a straw. Oh my gosh, those photos are so cute. It looks like he had the time of his life, and it looks like those children made so many lasting, lifelong memories. Oh my gosh, I'm so grateful that he does things like this and that he takes every patronage and ambassadorship and every relationship, especially in the philanthropic space, so seriously. And this can be said about Meghan as well. They both really prioritize their philanthropic efforts. When we get reports of moves they make throughout the year, every year I've noticed that there are far more philanthropic endeavors than there are business endeavors. And I know that that's probably very intentional, because it's speaking to what they do. They operate from a service-oriented place, so that makes sense, it aligns. Their words definitely match their actions. It's just so inspiring to see. It always just kind of, it wakes me up a little bit. Like, you know, you can kind of get in your hole. And it's really easy to do that, especially when you aren't mega rich. It is really easy to get into that hole where you're worrying about your day to day, you're making plans for the future, you're taking care of things in the present, you're building a life, you're living a life, you're escaping a life in some cases. We're all trying to grow in all aspects of our lives, at least we should be. And a lot of times we have responsibilities that render us responsible for other people too, like children. Maybe we take care of an elderly family member or parent. We have a spouse, we have ourselves, we have a job, we have friends in a social group. We have a lot of responsibilities as adults, and especially here in America and in an ever-changing landscape in society, and laws are consistently evolving and changing and our rights are being stripped away. There's always something at the front of the brain. Like, we rarely get a day where we can just go about our day. There's always some kind of emergency or some sort of new news that we now have to factor in to, like, oh, okay, well, my life is going to change in this way, et cetera. And we can get in our hole where, not self-centered in a negative way, but we kind of have to be self-centered in some ways to survive here. And when I am covering Harry and Meghan and R12 Foundation in general, R12 Productions and their amazing business jobs, their business projects and things like that, it can remind me that, you know, yes, your life demands a lot from you. And that's great. When you build a big life, you want to live that life. And when you're surviving, you want to survive, and you have a lot of things at the front of your brain. But There's so much to be had and experienced outside of ourselves, and it's important to commit some time, effort, and resources to that in whatever way. For example, one of the ways that I give back that is not financial donations, because that's not always possible for everyone, but in addition to my financial donations, one of the things that I do to give back is I work with United Nations women, UN women, and I do projects for free for charities, foundations, and organizations that are connected through the UN network. And I commit to doing projects for them for free, such as videography, editing. I conduct interviews for them sometimes. There are times where I've actually helped with other projects that are kind of behind the scenes, like office management core tasks, because that's what my background is in, or little things like that. Right now I'm working with, and this is the one I've worked with for the longest, is Better Life Vietnam. They teach Vietnamese children how to speak English so that they can be bilingual and they'll be a better candidate for jobs in the future and be able to communicate, and possibly if they choose to come to America to seek work or education, they will be able to communicate. And one of the things that I do for them is I watch their classes and I create these summary videos for them, for the kids to kind of review before they take their tests and things like that, but also for their YouTube so they can get more students to join their organization. And I'm just using that as an example of ways that I've been inspired by the Sussexes to really maximize my 24 hours. Shout out to Angel Reese, and use some of that time to give to others. And that doesn't always have to be financial. A lot of times when we have the conversation of like, what are you doing for society? What are you giving back? It's like, I can't afford to give back rent. The average rent here in the US is like $2,000 for one bedroom. When I got my first apartment, it was $650, and it was a two bedroom, two bath. I had a full, it was 1200 square feet. I had a full dining room, a full kitchen, a full living room with a balcony, and it was all bills paid. And it was in a really nice area with a gate and a security, and it was $650. That same apartment, and I looked it up, La Prada, that same apartment is now $1,800. And that's not bad for two bedroom, two bath. But when I got my first apartment, it was in 2009. That was the first apartment, or excuse me, 2008. And yes, that is a long time ago, but not really for that massive jump in rent. And the area that I lived in wasn't this well-to-do area. I mean, it was a decent area. It was in Mesquite, Texas. So it wasn't like this bad area. But yeah, I mean, things are expensive now. Like, I remember getting groceries and getting $120 a week. And that would be a lot of groceries. And I often had things left over. Now $120 is more like 4 or 5 days. And that's just for me and my husband. I can't imagine if we had kids, our groceries would likely be in the thousands. So I also live in Palm Beach County. But anyway, I say that to say, things are really expensive. The world is really a piece of shit right now. We've got a whole genocide going on, and our government is participating in that. We are under constant threat of losing our rights as Black people, as women. Like, we are constantly under the foot of our country all the time. We are constantly fighting for these very basic human rights. And so when the idea of charity comes up, I understand that that can raise anxiety for people, because it's like, you know, we're trying to survive. How could we possibly give back if we barely have enough to take care of ourselves? We might be in the same boat at some point. I get that. And that's why one of the things that I love doing is sharing ways that for free you can actually give back, whether that's reading to children at a library or doing the Big Brother, Big Sister program. I have a friend of mine who was kind of talking to me about, you know, I have two kids and giving back is hard because my kids always need stuff. Like, one of her kids is in a little league sport, and the other child has a lot of really special interests. She's a figure skater, and that is not a cheap sport to be part of. And so she's constantly trying to make things happen, make ends meet. And she was like, but I feel so inspired, and I love listening to your content about the Sussexes. And I do feel like I have an abundance, even though I work really hard to keep that abundance, but I want to share something. And I was like, have you considered the Boys and Girls Club or the Big Brother Big Sister program, where you're not actually giving financially necessarily, but you're sharing what you have to offer with someone who is in need of that. There are some kids who don't have community, and that's what they need. Have you thought about adopting a little brother or a little sister around the same age as your kids from the Big Brother Big Sister program? Not adopting, but like signing up for that. And then your kids now have a playmate. And while you go about your day doing fun activities with your kids, you now have another child that they can get along with that's part of this community. And that'll brighten up some kids' day. And that was like 2 years ago we talked about that. And it's now been over a year and a half that she has had two kids from the Big Brother Big Sister program that now do activities with them, and even one spent a holiday with them. And I just thought, whoa, like that child came over on Christmas morning and had Christmas with them. And it was just so cool. And she opened gifts. And so anyway, I say that to say, there are so many different ways that are non-financial, if that's not the way that you can give, and that's okay, that are non-financial that you can give back and help. And one of the ways that you can do that is through the UN Women program. If you go, or just UN in general, I got in through UN Women because I'm a member, but UN actually has like a volunteer portal where you apply to be a volunteer. And they give you a list of things that you can do, and you reach out to companies or organizations or foundations or whomever that are signed up with the UN. So that means they have to be vetted, and everything is through the UN. So all your information is safe, because it can be, I'll say this, it can be pretty stressful. When I first signed up to work with a company in Vietnam, I thought, you know, I really wanted to work with someone stateside because I just feel more comfortable. I'm here. I know how the law works here. And when you do things internationally, you open yourself up to a lot of risk in some cases. But because it was through the UN, there are a lot of safety measures that they go through, and all your information is safe, and the communication portal is safe. And it's really worked out for me for well over a year now. So I just recommend that if you're ever looking to get involved. Another way that I recommend people who are trying to get involved to find companies that I feel kind of have been vetted is through Archwell Foundation. And you can find them at archwell.org, or just go sussex.com and select the Archwell Foundation link. And those companies that they've worked with, you can go to those websites and look at what volunteer opportunities they have. So like with Kaboom, if you're in Texas or wherever else Kaboom is working, if you are in one of their locations, you can go to kaboom.com and look at how to support in non-financial ways and see how you can volunteer, or Harvest Home Los Angeles or Texas Women's Center or Dallas Women's Center. You know, you can just go to their website, Archwell Foundation, and look at companies they've, or organizations, excuse me, that they've worked with. And that can be a vetting measure as well. So anyway, it's interesting because that's one of the main topics of communication that I have with other squatties. When I've gotten voicemails and emails and we've exchanged just conversation, DMs. And one of the main topics is, how do I get involved? You know, how did you get involved? What, you know, how are you serving this need? Because I am consistently inspired by their amazing work. And it's interesting because when I first started covering Harry and Meghan, the main topic that I would be contacted about was fact checking, errors, stuff like that. Like, hey, could you look into this for me? Or, hey, you didn't say this word right. Like, that was kind of the main topic. And that quickly changed to, did you hear about this? Can you talk about this? Can you call this person out? Can you defend them in this space? And that was very much what was needed at the time. But I love how, after they offered us an amazing year of transparency, and they almost equipped us with swords and shields as squatties. And that's kind of how I see that. I know that they were just trying to correct the narrative so that they can move on with their lives and make sure that history was recorded correctly. And especially having children, I'm glad they did that. But I feel like a byproduct of that, and a very positive one, was that they equipped us with a sword and a shield. We no longer have to get in the trenches and fight with people and call people out and debate and argue and defend. They really put us in a bulletproof space because of the way they operate, which is transparently. And now, because they've done that for themselves and it benefited us as the squad, now we get to amplify their work. and we really get to dominate our content and our communications and our safe spaces with that. And I gotta say, I know there are some people who were kind of creating content regarding the Sussexes way longer than I was, and they were in the defense trenches way longer than I was. And I gotta say, it is such a blessing to be on this side of things, to be able to cover Misan Harriman and his amazing work, Meghan, Harry, Justin Trudeau, Serena Williams, like all of their work, and people who are orbiting them as well, or and people they orbit as well, and really talk about what matters. It's so nice. It's been so pleasant. I actually tweeted earlier, it is so much fun to be a squatty. And it is. I couldn't even, like, I usually have these profound quotes and words of wisdom, and it's just fun. Like, we get to talk about stuff that uplifts, and that is a healthy space to be in, especially since I'm a content creator as a hobby. It is kind of hard for your hobby to be in a negative space sometimes. And when people are making nasty, crass comments about Harry and Meghan and lying on them and stuff, I felt compelled to defend them, and I always was happy to do so. But because what I do is a hobby, it is so nice to have my hobby serve me personally, which is keeping me uplifted and inspired. So anyway, I just wanted to share that for anyone who might be in that space of like, I'm inspired by Harry and Meghan. Trust, then you're entitled to being part of the Sussex squad. You know, those commercials, that's like, have you tripped over a sidewalk? You might be entitled to compensation. Do you feel inspired by Harry and Meghan? You might be entitled to a Sussex squad community car. Join today. But if you feel yourself being inspired, it is my recommendation that you do something with that, whether it's start a blog and share your feelings, or another great idea is starting a blog and sharing some of the things that you do to get involved that are non-monetary and that can help other people get involved. I also love that the Sussex Squad fundraises very well. I mean, they just fundraised well over $20,000. And I hated that I didn't get to get a chance to get in that. I actually just paid my tuition. More on that later, you guys. Have some big news coming up, but I don't want to talk about it yet. So I didn't get to get involved just now this year, but it's great, the amazing work that they do. Sussex community events on Twitter. They are so active and so engaged, and they lead these really amazing fundraisers. So anyway, if you're ever looking to get involved, there's a few ways to do so. If you ever want to make your hobby about amplifying some of their great works, I'm always happy to help you. If you need any ideas, or not ideas, but if you, I'm not a wealth of knowledge in that way. I barely have ideas sometimes, but if you're looking for a way to hone in on how to get involved and hone in on a hobby that amplifies their work, feel free to reach out to me. I'm always happy to help if I can. I'll say this. Someone asked me, why did I say that my podcast was way easier and more fun than YouTube? There's a lot of reasons, but I don't want to get into all that because I don't want to take up all your time. But I'll say one of the things that I've loved about the podcast is that the controls are a lot easier and right in front of me. And it's easier to upload, easier to promote, easier to amplify. It connected me with ad revenue really quickly. And Podbean is a really responsive platform. They do a really great job of following up with me when I've had a concern. And that is not the world I've been in for the last 4 years, let me tell you. But this is what works for me. I can kind of get to the nitty gritty much faster. And I love video creation, which is why I kept the Patreon, because they let me be me too. But yeah, so that's why. But there's so many different ways. There's so many different platforms and so many different ways that you can express yourself creatively while also amplifying the Sussex's amazing work. So good luck with that. I hope you much success. And I want the squad to be way more communicative. I love when I see new podcasts pop up. I love when I see new YouTubes. I'm like, show me everything. I want to follow everybody. I want to talk to everybody. I want to listen to everybody. I love that the community is so strong, and I cannot wait to see how it continues to grow. I want more Sussex Squad podcasts. I want more Audible, but I also love YouTube. I just want more growth, more communication. We really do a great job of drowning out the noise, and I want that to continue and continue to excel. Speaking of that, though, I have really been giving thought to having a co-host on here for one episode a week, to have a co-host. And that has really been on my mind. I would love to, instead of just talking and giving my thoughts, I would love to share thoughts and really build a conversation around some of these topics. So, you don't have to be a content creator already. If you are open to being on the podcast and that's something that you might want to do, especially if you've ever been like a moderator of mine, feel free to let me know. You can email me at hellosharian@gmail.com. And I am happy to chat with you about that because I think that would be something fun. Once a week, I do three podcast episodes a week. So one of those would be great to have a host on. That would be so much fun. Let me know if that's something that you might want to do. I don't bite. And we could just have a casual conversation about an amazing couple doing an amazing work through their foundation. So now we have already talked about Invictus Games Foundation and their 10-year anniversary, but I do want to read their official press release or their official update on their website to commemorate this amazing feat. Now, the title of this, again, this is on Sussex.com. The title is A Decade of Invictus Games Foundation, and they have a great photo of the bagpipe player in St. Paul's Cathedral. This is a great photo. It says, this year marks the 10th anniversary of the Invictus Games Foundation, a milestone defined by courage, resilience, and strength. Over the past few days, Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex, paid tribute to the foundation's legacy by participating in a series of events celebrating a decade of changing and saving lives through sport. Earlier this week, the Duke joined in a conversation with former IGF chairman Sir Keith Mills and CEO of Fisher House Foundation, Ken Fisher. Pause. Y'all know that I am a groundbreaker for Fisher House Foundation, meaning I fundraise for them through my internet work, through live streams. And we will be having a live stream soon, and I cannot wait to talk more about that. But let's get back to this. The group reflected on the inspiration behind establishing the first games in 2014 and acknowledged the accomplishments of IGF in assisting thousands across the world who have given in service of their nations. The conversation was followed by a service of thanksgiving and reception at St. Paul's Cathedral, where the Duke delivered a special reading of 1 Corinthians 12:4 through 11 to over 1,000 guests. He did a great job of that, too. The ceremony was a poignant gathering with many references to recovery and rehabilitation by international wounded and sick service personnel and veterans. With 400 competitors from 13 nations back in 2014 to 500 competitors from 21 nations across every continent in Dusseldorf in 2003, the Invictus Games have shown the world with the unbreakable spirit of its competitors. Each participant's story is a testament to the power of perseverance and the unwavering will to overcome adversity. The Duke's vision has created more than just a series of sporting events. It has built a legacy that illustrates the power of connection in recovery. The Invictus Games embody compassion, respect, and a belief in the extraordinary capabilities of the human spirit. This 10th anniversary is not just a celebration of past accomplishments, but a reaffirmation of games' enduring mission to inspire, support, and challenge perceptions about what can be achieved with hope and determination. On behalf of the Duke, we extend his overwhelming gratitude to all who make the Invictus Games possible. As we celebrate this decade of achievements, we also prepare for the future, particularly to the first Winter Hybrid Games in Vancouver Whistler next year with anticipation and excitement. I thought that was so beautiful, and it definitely was a great summary. Now, something that I forgot to do when we talked about Scotty's Little Soldiers was share Prince Harry's news clip of him talking about it. So I'm actually going to share that now before we move on.
How is it being here?
It's great. Just as the lights turned off. Perfect timing. It's great. It's amazing. What Scotty's is doing with these kids is absolutely incredible and very needed as well. And the more opportunity we get to do these kind of events, the more that families and kids around the, up and down the country actually know that Scotty's exists, which is really the most important thing.
How many Maltesers
did we offer? You guys probably know better than I do, but at least three. I think by that point it started getting a little bit weird.
And that's back in the UK.
She said, it's nice to have you back in the UK. He seems to be very happy to be back, but I think it was more so with who he was around. I don't think it was only that he was back in the UK, that he was so excited to be back, which it probably was. It's great to go home. It's great to visit home. Even if you don't want to stay, like, I love going to Mount Pleasant, but I don't want to stay there. Like, I love going to Dallas. I won't stay. I'm coming back to Florida, unfortunately. But yeah, when you live in Montecito, I'm sure you don't want to be that far away that long. But I think it was more so about the people he got to be around. He got to be around the kids, and he was having the time of his life. He got to see his family, his aunt, his uncle, I'm sure some cousins. He got to be around his Invictus family. He just got to be in his element, and you could see him glowing. So it was great to see that. But this footage coming out of him and Meghan in Nigeria, they are truly having the time of their lives. And you can tell, like, I've seen them very, very happy, but I am trying to find a comparable time. I mean, I think it's the last time they were in Africa, if I'm going to be honest, where they were smiling from ear to ear this much. I know their jaws are hurting. By the time they leave after this 3-day trip, I know their jaws are going to be sore. They have not stopped smiling since they've been there. And I mean these big, like, beautiful enjoyment, happy smiles, not just polite, like, oh, it's nice to be here. Hello. Hi. Like, they are hugging and they're having these really big hugs. They're playing, they're giving speeches, they're laughing, they're smiling. It's almost like they are having just as good a time this time as they did the last time they were in Africa. I'm glad they were able to visit Nigeria this go round. And you can tell that they feel very, very loved and welcomed. And I'm glad. I wouldn't want it any other way. So I wanted to share a little bit about their trip. On Monday, we are actually going to take a retrospective look at their trip so that we have all the details of everything they did. We can share some of the organizations they met with. Right now, they are still in the thick of the first day, so we don't have a whole lot to go on. We have a lot of great footage. We don't have a whole lot to go on, but that footage is actually over on my Patreon now, some of that from their day one excursions. But we do have some, so we're going to get into it. To get that information, I'm going with People. They have an article titled, Meghan and Harry Arrive in Nigeria for First Official Tour Post-Royal Life. Now listen, official tour is a lot. They were invited to Nigeria by the Chief of Defense. And listen, fine, whatever. They're trying to make it as if they're on a royal tour. I mean, they're royal, so it's a royal tour because of that. But this is a visit because they were invited and they accepted the invitation. And this is great because Nigeria is now part of the Invictus Games. So it's great. It works out all around. Also, as you know, Meghan is 43% Nigerian. So she's just going home. This is a trip home. So let's get into this article. It was written by Aaron Hill, Simon Perry, and Kirsty Hatcher. Now, I have read Aaron Hill and Simon Perry's articles before. They do a great job, but never Kirsty Hatcher. So let's see how this turns out. Meghan and Harry touched down in Nigeria on Friday, May 10th, for their first official international tour since stepping back from their royal roles in 2020. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex were pictured arriving at Nnamdi Azikiwe International Airport in Abuja on Friday morning. The couple were invited to visit the African country by its Chief of Defense Staff, the highest-ranking military official. The visit follows Harry's recent trip to the UK to mark the 10th anniversary of the Invictus Games, although he invited family members, including his father, King Charles, brother, Prince William, and sister-in-law, Kate Middleton, to attend a service at St. Paul's Cathedral. None of them were present. Meghan, who did not accompany Harry to the UK, joined him afterward in London's Heathrow Airport before they traveled together to Nigeria. Now, people were pretty pissed off that some of the senior royals didn't come. I'm actually glad because I feel like they would have just been a distraction. And because it was Harry and his amazing Invictus Games team, I'm really glad that the focus was on Harry's attendance and he was able to connect with people before and after the event, the service of Thanksgiving. But also, it wasn't a distraction from the amazing Invictus Games Foundation and all of the work that their team has truly done to make such a successful event and a foundation itself. They've done so much work. So I'm really glad that the senior royals didn't go, the other senior royals didn't go, because they just would have been a distraction. And I'm sure nothing would have brought them more joy than to distract from the amazing service members and veterans, as well as their families, who have benefited so much from the Invictus Games. So I'm glad that they didn't get to detract from that. And, you know, the Invictus Games Foundation, their amazing work, and all of the people that they serve were able to have the spotlight. I'm really glad about that. As the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are no longer working royals, the visit is not on behalf of King Charles or the UK government. Now, people, I'm glad that they're trying to be as informative as possible, but who the hell thought that? If that's something that people thought, then they're just ridiculous. The couple were invited by Nigeria's chief of defense staff to highlight Harry's Invictus Games, which the African country joined last year, sending athletes to the event for the first time. On Friday morning, the couple will visit a school and meet with the chief of defense staff. In the afternoon, Harry will meet injured service members at a military hospital. People's chief foreign correspondent, Simon Perry, will exclusively join the trip to Nigeria, covering the Duke and Duchess of Sussex's various outings. Wow, good for you, Simon Perry. I can't wait to see what you bring back. On Saturday, they will attend a training session for the organization Nigeria Unconquered and a reception hosted by the chief of defense staff in honor of military families. Later, Meghan will co-host a Women in Leadership event with Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, Director General of the World Trade Organization. On Sunday, the Duke and Duchess will attend a basketball clinic with Giants of Africa, a cultural reception, and a polo fundraiser for Nigeria Unconquered. During their time as working royals, Harry and Meghan went on several official international tours. In 2018, shortly after their royal wedding, they visited Australia, Tonga, Fiji, and New Zealand, announcing Meghan's pregnancy during the trip. In February of 2019, while expecting Archie, they toured Morocco and later visited Southern Africa with their five-month-old son. During their visit to Cape Town in South Africa in 2019, Meghan gave a memorable speech, proudly speaking about her many roles, including her Black heritage. And good for you people for capitalizing the B in Black. A lot of people try to get away with being shady. Quote, on one personal note, may I just say that while I am here with my husband as a member of the royal family, I want you to know that for me, I am here as a mother, as a wife, as a woman of color, and as your sister. I am here with you and I am here for you, she said to cheers from the crowd. During their time in Nigeria, Meghan and Harry will meet with service members and take part in a variety of cultural activities. The visit will highlight Harry's Invictus Games, which welcomed 500 athletes at last year's event in Germany, with 21 nations in attendance, including Nigeria. Yes, and when they walked across the stage to welcome all the teams, the crowd went wild. Alhaji Mohammed Akubar Badaru, the Minister of Defense, who participated in last year's event in Germany, has indicated Nigeria's readiness to host the games if given the chance. In 2022, during an episode of her podcast, Archetypes, the Duchess of Sussex disclosed that she found out she had Nigerian ancestry, comprising 43% of her genetic heritage through a genealogy test. At the Invictus Games in Dusseldorf, Germany last year, Meghan and Harry dedicated time to interact with the Nigerian team, whom Harry mentioned his wife was supporting in his opening address. Quote, now I'm not saying we play favorites in our home, but since my wife discovered she's of Nigerian descent, it's likely to get a little bit more competitive this year. I love that speech. His opening speech at the Invictus Games 2023 was so good, but I'm gonna tell y'all this. Y'all know I love theatrics. I'm dramatic. I'm a mess, but the way that they had the screen show a compilation of people and the music building, and then they had the lights go up and then come back down, and then the lights went up on an empty stage, and then they came back down and the light came on and Harry was in the center. I was like, yes, give us production. Give us a show. Like, I love theatrics. Like, if you give me theatrics, give me some lights, give me some smoke, give me some video footage. Like, you give me that, I'm on your side. Like, I love theatrics. I love a show. That's why I'm a fan of Beyonce, right? Like, obviously. So I love it. And I love how well they put together that opening ceremony. I had the time of my life. But it was so much fun. Now I'm gonna say this. The Merker Spiel, y'all need to put Liz on your drinks. Okay, let's go. My soda was just spilling everywhere, child. But anyway, and those seats are made for people half my size. And I remembered I'm American. So I was like, girl, yeah. Like, American been feeding y'all white sugar in your water, girl. So like, we bigger than the average bear over there. It definitely inspired me to get back on my health journey for sure. Because I was like, I'm only going to get one butt cheek in this chair. Anyway, but we had a good time. I didn't need to be sitting anyway. I need to be standing and cheering for the teams. And that's exactly what I did. Soda all over my shirt, just having the time of my life. Anyway. So they have a full diary while they're over there. Oh, Lord, I've been covering the Royals too long. Not a full diary, child. They have a full itinerary while they're in Nigeria. And we are already getting a lot of footage from their trip. We're getting so much information from their trip. So it's been really cool. I also wanted to share some of the video footage from one of the speeches that Harry and Meghan gave. So I'm going to share that now.
And there is no shame. Able to acknowledge that today is a bad day. Okay? That you woke up this morning feeling sad, that you were at school feeling stressed, that you lost a loved one in your family that you don't know who to turn to or who to speak to. If you see your friend in your class not smiling, what are you going to do? Are you going to check in on them? Are you going to ask them if they're okay? Because it's okay not to be okay.
Do you see why I'm married? I'm so inspiring because he speaks the truth. Around this room, I see myself in all of you as well. To have our first visit to Nigeria, be here with all of you. We believe in you. We believe in your futures. We believe in your ability to continue to tell your stories and to just be honest with each other. There is no need to suffer in silence. Just make sure that you're taking care of yourselves, and that begins with your mental health. And really talking about whatever's coming up for you. So thank you to all of you. Thank you to these teams, to our executive director of the Archwell Foundation, whose birthday it is today. I look around this room.
So it was really nice to see their speech. Now, that was covered by the BBC. But again, like I said, when we convene on Monday, I'll be able to do a nice look back once things have concluded and get all the details for you. And maybe we can listen to some of those speeches in full, which I would love. I would absolutely love to do. So that's all that I have right now for the Nigeria trip. Again, I will continue to collect information and collect data. Those videos are up actually on my Patreon right now. But in the meantime, in between time, I actually wanted to move over to have our first community conversation that we haven't had in a while. Now, I haven't gotten any voicemails lately, but I have been getting a lot of messages. And so I'm going to read a message right now. The person did not give their name, but they left me a text message on my community conversation phone number. And the text message reads, "The question was asked by Tabloid TV if Meghan should be given a second chance by the UK. The answer to their question is that Meghan has done nothing wrong. The real question should be if Meghan should give the UK a second chance. She can decide for herself. But I say that she should never give them a second chance unless they do as the Bible says and repent. That means to feel sorry for what you have done, turn around from your bad behavior, and do good." Now, that person did not give me their name, but I really appreciate you leaving that note for me. And I agree with you 100%. I am not an advocate of radical acceptance of people's bad behavior. I believe in radical acceptance in life, meaning when things happen, we really can't spend a whole lot of time wondering why they happen necessarily. But I do think we should spend a lot of time figuring out how, with this new development, how do I move forward in the best way? We don't want to get stuck in a loop of like, why did this happen? What could I have done differently? I think if you can pull that information, great, but don't beat a dead horse behind it. Sometimes shit just happens. And so in that way, I believe in radical acceptance. But when it comes to people, I don't believe in unconditional acceptance or unconditional love. I have never believed in that. And I know that sounds insane, but I do not believe anyone should love anyone or anything unconditionally. I personally just don't believe that. I think if it works for you, fine. But I am one of those people that loves with conditions. I operate and accept with conditions. And if you have shown that you are willing to knowingly abuse me or cause harm to me, I won't accept you back in my life. people go through things and people do things. And I'll say this, mistakes happen as well. People can hurt you because they had the intent to do something else. And a byproduct of whatever that choice was that you ended up hurt. And while people can cause harm, it doesn't always mean that harm is intentional. And in that case, I can forgive. I can forgive if someone says, you know, I was just trying to get ahead in my career and I didn't realize that my move would hurt you, or, you know, I was really selfish in that moment. And while I would never hurt you on purpose, I did actually hurt you. Those are things that I can forgive. What I can't forgive is, you know, I want to take her down, or, or, you know what, she has this great opportunity. I'm going to try to interrupt that. Or if you intentionally cause harm to me, you can't be accepted back into my life. And if you are worthy of my love, you won't do a thing like that to intentionally cause harm. And so I say that to say, when I am assessing whether someone can come back into my life and I can be open to that and we can build something new, which includes leaving the past in the past, you can forgive but not forget. And I understand that, but you have to move on. And once you decide to forgive someone, you've got to leave that where it was. It can't come up all the time. You got to move forward. That's a big ask. And so I have to ask myself, can I do that in each situation? Am I willing to do that in this situation? And what could it potentially lead to, good or bad, to move forward with this person versus moving forward without? And that goes with family, friends, people, what have you. One of the things that has always intrigued me about talking about the situation between the royal family versus Harry and Meghan is that it includes so many things. Corporate structure, family dynamics, interracial marriages, and clashing of cultures. What's the norm in America is not the norm in the UK and vice versa. And one of the things that I'm always pulling away when I'm having conversations about families who don't accept a new in-law or a new family member is that if you go in with the best of intentions and you attempt to acclimate and it wasn't enough, then it is their loss. It's their loss. There are some people who enter families and they refuse to budge and they refuse to acclimate and they refuse to give to get. You know, you have to compromise to get to know new people. There's always a compromise here. Maybe they are morning people and we're all on vacation. I'm not a morning person, but, you know, to make sure we have a good time, I'm going to give a little in this area. And maybe they all like to eat brisket, but this person is vegan. So we're going to throw some vegetables on our menu for this person. We all got to give and get, give to get a little. But when it comes to, if she want to fit in with this family, she's going to have to bring her own food. If she want to get in with this family, she's going to have to submit. If she wants to get in with this family, we got to be able to poke and poke and poke at her. And she has to take it. She got to get some thick skin. That's where I'm like, hell no. No. I once heard this quote a long time ago that said, when families merge, or when a new in-law comes into the family, there seems to be a habit or a trend of the woman having to audition versus the man who is welcomed. And that has never been more true. I've had that experience too, where when I entered a new family or I was dating someone or getting married to someone and I met their family, and their family almost asked, not almost, asked me to audition. I mean, I've recounted this on my YouTube once, of meeting someone's family for the first time, and their relative, their brother, actually gave me a rapid fire interview in his living room. And I'm a pretty, back then I was way more nice and understanding than I am now. Now I would be like, well, no, if we're having a conversation, we need to speak to each other. I'm not going to just be answering questions for you. Like, that's a little weird, especially like in an interview format where you're sitting like right across from me and not allowing me to elaborate before you ask the next question or engage. You're just like, do you do this? Do you do this? Do you eat this? Do you do this? Are you going to cook? Are you going to clean? Like, and at the time I thought, okay, this is a weird joke, but, you know, humor is humor, whatever. And I went with the flow. Now I would absolutely never do that shit. I would be like, if you don't get your ass out of my face. but now I have a lot more understanding and a higher level of self-respect, I think. And so that allows me to be a lot more discerning. And that's just coming with growth. At the time, I was very much a people pleaser, very nice. And I assumed if I intend good for others, they intend good for me. So just go with the flow. Don't be, you know, persnickety. Have a good time. But yeah, they rapid fire interviewed me, required that I cook a meal for the whole family. And I was like, I love to cook. That sounds like a fun thing, but it's not about me loving to cook. It's about, who the hell do you think you are assigning me anything to do to be part of this group? Because now I would be like, the hell? Like, fucking insane. Like, but, you know, that's what 14 years will do to you. It'll certainly change you and absolutely radicalize you. So, and I don't think that's that radical. But I say that to say, from my own experience, in-laws mistreating people is a really sore subject to me because it's just silly. When I was growing up, I never saw my family do that. My family has always been very, very welcoming. And that's what I thought was the norm. When my mom remarried, my whole family got along with her new husband, including my dad's family. They all knew my stepdad and they met him. And when they would drop me off and stuff, my grandmother would go out and say, "How are you doing, Craig? How are you?" My grandfather would say, "How is Craig? Is he nice? Is he," you know, and that's kind of what I knew to be how things are. My dad, with all his new wives or fiancés, they were always really welcomed. And when my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, would see my stepmothers or my dad's girlfriends or whomever, she would be like, "Hi, how are you?" I've never been in an environment where women had to audition. Growing up and realizing that's kind of the norm in a lot of families, where like, we don't know about her, we got to suss her out. Meanwhile, that same family will just radically accept whatever male enters the family and nobody says anything. And it's these interesting characters and nobody has the same rapid fire questions and nobody's telling them they got to cook or build a shed to prove themselves. Like, the women had to prove themselves and the men were just welcomed. I said, "Ooh, this is a misogynistic group of people. No wonder I don't really feel comfortable. I'm not intended to. The intent is to make me submissive and I don't submit to any human." So I say that to say Megan's situation actually kind of triggered me in a little bit. And I think that's what drove me to really defend her. Because when you hear her talk about joining the royal family, it wasn't joining the royal family for her. It was meeting her boyfriend, fiance, husband's family. And those people absolutely intended for her to audition for them. And I think worse, because they were royal or royal affiliated, I think they fully intended for her to submit to them. And now we have a problem, because what the hell? Like, for Megan, it's always so heartbreaking to hear how she went into that situation versus how she was received. It always puts a real damper on that for me, because on the outside, before we knew any of this stuff, it just looked like Megan, this amazing, accomplished, philanthropic, professional woman with this huge life and these amazing fans and her amazing relationship with everybody around her, including the staff that worked for her, who loved her dearly, including the homeless shelter where she donated food from the set that wasn't used from craft services, including the shelter where she donated turkeys and cooked for people on holidays. See where I'm going with this? They all loved her, and she was going to join a family that could really use a lot of spirit. And she had an abundance of it. And we hadn't seen spirit in that family since 1997. And it had been a long time. And I said, what an amazing path for her, but even better for them. I can't believe they managed to get her. I'm so excited to see what happens in their family now. It seems like they get it. And finding out what the hell was going on behind the scenes, the fact that she kept up such a nice, polite image for those people is even more of a testament to their biggest loss, which is losing her. And it just makes me sad for her. It really makes me sad for her. I just kind of want to give an example. Damn, I hate that you didn't give me your name, whoever you are who commented this, who texted this, because I would love to shout you out. But it's a person with a 281 phone number area code. So if you remember texting me on Monday with this, please text me again your name so that I can share it if you want me to share it. I like to shout people out. But I want to share a little bit of how Megan went into that family so optimistically and how she was received.
It's so funny if I look back at it now, because now I know so much. And I'm so glad I didn't then, because I could just authentically be myself without so much preparedness. Even when Will and Kate came over and I had met her for the first time, they came over for dinner. I remember I was in ripped jeans and I was barefoot. like I was a hugger, always been a hugger. I didn't realize that that is really jarring for a lot of Brits. I guess I'd started to understand very quickly that the formality on the outside carried through on the inside. That there is a forward-facing way of being. And then you close the door and you go, oh, great. Okay, we can relax now. But that formality carries over on both sides. And that was surprising to me.
I know of. And every family is complex as well. So she's done an absolutely amazing job just, you know, getting in there. And it's, you know, it's the family that I suppose she's never had.
I remember so vividly the first Christmas at Passandrium, calling my mom, and she's like, how's it going? And I said, oh my gosh, it's amazing. It's just like a big family like I always wanted. And there was just this constant movement and energy and fun. And at dinner, I was sat next to H's grandfather, and I just thought it was so wonderful. And I was like, oh, we chatted and it was so great. And I talked about this and talked about this. And he was like, you had his bad ear. He couldn't hear anything you were saying. I was like, oh, well, I thought it went really well.
His cousin. Tonight, there is a new royal scandal. The wife of one of the Queen's cousins, Princess Michael of Kent, wore what's called a blackamoor brooch to the Queen's annual Christmas lunch. The jewelry is widely viewed as racist, and the decision to wear it quickly drew criticism on social media.
I rarely wore color. There was thought in that, to my understanding. You can't ever wear the same color as Her Majesty if there's a group event. But then you also shouldn't be wearing the same color as one of the other more senior members of the family. So I was like, well, what's a color that they'll probably never wear? Camel, beige, white. So I wore a lot of muted tones, but it also was so I could just blend in. Like, I'm not trying to stand out here. So there's no version of me joining this family and trying to not do everything I could to fit in. I don't want to embarrass the family.
I was devastated. I knew that she was struggling. We were both struggling. But I never thought that it would get to that stage. And the fact that it got to that stage, I felt angry and ashamed. I didn't deal with it particularly well. I dealt with it as institutional Harry, as opposed to husband Harry. And what took over my feelings was my royal role. I'd been trained to worry more about what are people going to think if we don't go to this event, we're going to be late. And looking back on it now, I hate myself for it. What she needed from me was so much more than I was able to give.
I wanted to go somewhere to get help, but I wasn't allowed to. They were concerned about how that would look for the institution.
They knew how bad it was. They thought, why couldn't she just deal with it? As if to say, well, you know, everybody else has dealt with it. Why can't she deal with it? But this was different. It was really different. But actually, if you strip all that away and say, okay, fine, it was exactly the same. So do we still believe that she should have just sucked it up like other members of the family? Or does one think that maybe it's about time that we stop? But no one would have private conversations with the editors saying, enough. My dad said to me, darling boy, you can't take on the media. The media will always be the media. And I said, I fundamentally disagree. I have 30 years experience of looking behind the curtain and seeing how this system works and how it runs. I mean, just constant briefings about other members of the family, about favors inviting the press in. It's a dirty game.
it could be the end of an era for the Royal Fab Four.
The Fabulous Four no more? Meghan and Harry officially cutting ties with William and Kate. The split fueling speculation of further strains in the once close relationship between Harry and William and growing tensions between their wives.
I would far rather get destroyed in the press than play along with this game or this business of trading. And to see my brother's office copy the very same thing that we promised the two of us would never ever do, that was heartbreaking.
Ready.
For our part, we chipped in that we weren't too pleased when Willie and Kate switched place cards and changed seats at our wedding. We'd followed the American tradition, placing couples next to each other. But Willie and Kate didn't like that tradition, so their table was the only one where spouses were apart. Kate looked out into the garden, gripping the edges of the leather so tightly that her fingers were white, and said she was owed an apology. Meg asked, for what? And I said, it's not a big deal. It's baby brain. Because you just had a baby. It's hormones. She looked genuinely confused. Sorry, I talked about your hormones. That's just how I talk with my girlfriends. Willie pointed at Meg. It's rude, Megan. It's not.
So that's just to illustrate the point that she was never intended to be included in that family. She went in with the highest expectations and the highest hopes and the most positive attitude. And she was met with a wall. And if anybody's ever been met with a wall, especially when they are going in with high hopes and the spirit of just being part of it and being flexible and being engaged and being treated like no matter what you do, you won't be good enough. That's tough. And back to the original comment of should the UK welcome Meghan back or let her back in? And just like the commenter said, it's not about whether the UK would let her back in. It's whether she will willingly come back to the UK and if it's even worth her time at this point after how she was treated. And one of the things that I always feel really bad about is that Meghan always connected really well with the public everywhere she's been, in the UK included. And because of the tabloids and the royal family there and how they have abused her, she has to miss out on that relationship that really did mean a lot to her. And you can tell she put a lot into making a positive relationship with the public there. And if you're not aware, just look at some of the people who follow my channel and comment who are from the UK and how much they miss her and how much they know she had to leave and she had to not be there anymore because of how their press is abusing her. And that's not even something the public wants. The royal family is there to serve the public. And they are literally actively driving out someone who their own public wants to be part of and wants to be part of their life as well. The royal family is actively working against the interest of its people. And the agenda is just racism. It's really sad. And so I agree with the person who sent me that comment. It's not about whether the UK should accept Meghan back because Meghan didn't do anything wrong. It's should she even bother? And in my opinion, no. No. She's done enough. After a while, when you've extended enough olive branches and you've been as understanding as possible and you've attended enough summits to reconcile and people have intentionally caused harm to you, it is not worth the fight. It's kind of like when people say, we've been through ups and downs in our relationship. And then you find out more about the ups and downs and they're talking about cheating. And it's like, oh, well, no, that's not ups and downs. That's kind of That's abuse. That's intentional harm. That's not ups and downs. Ups and downs is when you as a couple are dealing with what life throws at you, not when your partner is the thing throwing the strife at you. That's not ups and downs. That's you're waging war against me and our own union. That's not ups and downs. That's I'm in an abusive situation and I need to get the hell out of it. So anyway, I'm glad that she is free and safe, and I cannot believe how nasty people were to her. I don't care how long it's been and how much content I've consumed and how much I've learned about, read about, watched, heard about. It will never not be shocking to me that they so brazenly abused her, and it was all because she was Black. You cannot convince me otherwise. But, you know, anyway, thank you so much for your comment. And I wanted to talk about this other comment that I got from Joan Garcia. Joan Garcia said, hi, Joan. Joan Garcia says, hi, Sharian. I wondered about you and found your site and podcast. I play them in my Amazon Music. Happy to hear you again. Thank you so much. I'm so happy you are listening. She said, listening works. I work and I listen. I've had two PCs in a row crash. One had years worth of work. Oh, no. I'm so sorry. I recovered files from BUs and my web host, so I hope to relaunch my site soon. Love you. Take care. Love you more. And I'm so sorry to hear that that happened. I can't wait to see that your site is back up. If you don't mind, feel free to share your site and I will check it out because it sounds like you have a great site. So let me know. I hate to hear that that happened. So I'm really glad that you were able to tune in through the podcast. That makes me very, very happy. So before we get out of here, I did want to talk about the one pop culture topic, which is, have you guys seen this video of Jennifer Lopez going around? So I'll describe it. It's everywhere. So I'm sure you've seen it, but it's Jennifer Lopez at the Met Gala, whatever, where she is a co-host alongside Zendaya, and I forgot the other two co-hosts. I know it was Chris Hemsworth and somebody else. But anyway, she's one of the four co-hosts, and she's wearing this amazing crystal gown, not unlike one that we've seen her wear several times before. And as she's going up the steps, a reporter who is at the Met Gala and reporting on the front line says, Jennifer Lopez, who are you wearing? Very standard question. And she looks at this person and looks them up and down. There is a significant pause. I mean, a good 3-second pause, maybe 2-second pause. She looks them up and down and very dismissively goes, oh, Schiaparelli, hi, to someone else. Now, people have been saying, see, Jennifer Lopez is a bully. She's mean. She's all these things. And from the video, I can see how they came to that conclusion. I will say this, and not to make excuses for people, because here's the thing. When you are at work or when you are in public, your personal shit needs to stay on the other side. You have to, if you're going to play the game, you have to play the game. Because at the end of the day, no one could see that reporter's face, but everybody saw you behave that way. And what you do represents who you are and how you want to be perceived. But my thought was, what if this is a reporter who she recognizes? Jennifer Lopez has been a celebrity for a long time, a very long time. What if this is a person who she recognizes who hasn't been very kind to her, or who has written something nasty about her, or prior to recording, she recognized something, or the person did or said something right before she hit record, only to then get that image of Jennifer Lopez? Now, that's a lot of what ifs, but I'll say in a world where nothing can really be 100% unless you were there and have both sides, I will say it's really hard to beat those allegations of being a bully and being a bad boss and being having a nasty attitude when we see videos like this. So I don't know if you've seen it. It is quite uncomfortable to see, but we never really know the whole story. So I haven't been J-Lo's rude and blah, blah, blah. What I will say is Jennifer Lopez has been a celebrity for a really long time, so she should know better. Just at the end of the day, she should absolutely know better. Also, Jennifer Lopez was a celebrity when paparazzi were at their worst. She even has a whole video that depicts how she's treated like she's in a fishbowl. Now she would pay for that fishbowl. But she came up in this time of celebrity where paparazzi were allowed to pretty much do everything other than choke you out. They could go very, very far with celebrities, and there were very little laws to protect them. And they weren't so kind to Jennifer Lopez back then. This could have been a reporter she recognized from that time. I, you know, the thing is, you just don't know. But what I will say is, if I were Anna Wintour, if I were the organizers of the Met, if I were the designers at Schiaparelli, I would have seen that and been like, okay, if you're going to be yelling out my name, you need to do so with some fucking class. Like, you don't need to be, I would be pissed if I spent months working on a gown, put it on a celebrity, and then that celebrity is like, I'm wearing Sharon Sade, whatever. I would be like, great, thanks. Now my name literally is associated with this awful moment at the biggest night in fashion, which is my industry. Oh, I would be ticked off at her. I hope the powers that be have had a conversation with her. And hopefully she puts out some sort of statement explaining what happened. But knowing her, she is one of those that's like, ignore it and it'll go away. She's not going to address this. Anyway, y'all let me know what y'all thought about that video. Oof. Ooh, that was bad. That was so cringy. Let me know what you thought about that video. And what do you think was the reason? Why do you think Jennifer Lopez treated that person that way so blatantly? And what do you think about what we've discussed today? Let me know. We've covered quite a few topics. I cannot wait for Monday. I'm so excited to look back on the on Harry and Meghan's trip to Nigeria and talk about it from a retrospective standpoint, so that we can see things from in a retroactive way. That way we can talk about things with detail. A lot more will have come out by that point. And I'm pretty sure we'll get some updates on Sussex.com. So that's typically what I prefer to lead my topics with. So anyway, again, I am looking for a co-host for one episode every week. If you are interested in doing that, feel free to reach out to me in the comment section or email me at hellosharian@gmail.com. And you're welcome to DM me. I'm everywhere on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, everywhere. As at Sharian Sade. Very simple. or message me on SharianSade.com, whatever. Anyway, that's all I have for you guys today. It was such a nice day to have such a fun conversation. We have nothing but positive updates, and that's always nice. I appreciate everybody's support. Thank you for listening to the podcast, and I will see you next time. Bye. Everybody, welcome back to the Sharian Sade podcast.